He was studying 1 Corinthians 13, which happens to be one of my favorite passages. Love never fails, it tells us. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things.
The mindset of the entire anti-university or multiversity is trying to drive home the point that there is no meaning in life. You are your own God. Do what you will do for your own sake. Pay us $40,000 a year to do it here.
The story of the changing of water to wine already has within it important references to Jesus' death.
Hello. I want to say that foreigners with English as a second language also love issues, etc. Bye.
When you hear the term religious right, this is an old term now by now. What's the picture that pops into your mind? What face do you see when I say religious right? For some of you, it will be maybe Ronald Reagan, or it will be probably more likely. Google results indicate Jerry Falwell, the late Jerry Falwell, maybe another face there. When I use the term religious left, does a face pop into your mind? Is there a face for the religious left? Why is it that there is so much media coverage of the religious right and so little of the religious left? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, March the 2nd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about the media and mutual misconceptions about the left and the right, red and blue Americans. Terry Mattingly of GetReligion.org will be our guest for the first half hour or so of the program. Casey Maddox joins us after that, Senior Counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments today in a legal challenge to a Texas abortion law. The resurrection of the believer will be the subject after that in Hour 2 of Issues, etc., on into Hour 2 of Issues, etc. Pastor James Douthwaite will join us. He's written an article for Modern Reformation magazine titled The Resurrection Body. Then Mark and Molly Hemingway will join us from the Weekly Standard and The Federalist. We will go over the November elections, especially on what we learned last night with the Super Tuesday results. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about the media and mutual misconceptions about red and blue Americans. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here again.
So for decades, the media have been reporting on the religious right, and for years, Get Religion has been trying to get them to report on the religious left. Why?
Well, you can start off just with what you summarized earlier. People just don't even really even think consciously of a religious left, which in part, first of all, it doesn't do any credit to sincere religious liberal believers. But besides that, it makes Americans think that conflict in America about religion is only coming from one side of the spectrum. Whereas, I mean, I give you an example. Years and years ago, there was going to be a major protest over abortion. When I was at the Rocky Mountain News in Denver, there was going to be a Operation Rescue was going to hit, try to shut down for a couple of hours and force protests. A major clinic in Boulder, Colorado, which was primarily famous for being one of America's leading abortion clinics that specializes in late term, third trimester abortion, very controversial stuff. When we were preparing for this, I raised the issue, well, who are we going to be interviewing among liberals who are, religious liberals who are in favor of abortion? And everybody looked at me like I was crazy. And I said, no, that's actually an extremely important factor in all this. I mean, there are entire religious denominations that are in favor of abortion rights. If we only make this a bunch of conservatives have come out to protest this clinic, a bunch of church people in church buses are all heading up there to chain themselves to the doors, et cetera, we give the false impression that this entire conflict is essentially being caused by one group of people or only involves the beliefs, the sincere religious beliefs of one group of people. So I helped another reporter research an entire story on religious groups. I mean, specifically, we included some Baptists who fall into that category. We did this story on religious groups that back abortion rights. And I think it ended up being a much more complete story. Well, okay, push that whole thing forward a couple of decades now. We're way, way further down the road. One of the most interesting stories in the current election, both sides of the story are just in my opinion, getting abysmal coverage. One of them is very obvious, and we can come back to this here in a second, which is the whole Donald Trump is winning the evangelicals thing again, which that story just will not die. Our own Bobby Ross the other day, I dared him to do this, and I guessed a number out of the air that we had done like 28 posts related to this topic. And sure enough, he found 28 and linked and put up this amazing chain of active URLs, kind of Molly Ziegler Hemingway style, you know. And you can find more information here, 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 here. You know, one of those things? So anyway, so if the press and the public don't understand that you don't win the evangelical vote by getting 35% of it, and that evangelicals are not a monolithic group, flip that over to the other side. What are the religious components and what are the religious tensions among Democrats? At this point, based on coverage you've seen, can you even name one?
Not really, not based on coverage.
But it's okay, well, just think out of your own head. Think creatively in it. Let me interview you here for a second.
Okay, so pose the question.
Okay, so name two or three religious tensions in the current Democratic coalition.
Let's see. See, I spoke too soon because my knowledge didn't extend beyond the coverage, I don't think. Not off the top of my head.
Okay, well, let's start. Well, first of all, there are black evangelicals. And there are Latino evangelicals.
See, this is why we have you, Terry. Because you think this way.
Well, I mean, just stop and think about that. Think of one of the biggest trends in American Catholicism right now is Latinos converting specifically to Pentecostal and charismatic forms of Protestantism. When those people make that move, what do you think happens to their politics? The simple matter is all kinds of things. Some of them change, some of them don't. I mean, I guarantee you, if you go into an Assemblies of God church that's predominantly Latino, you're going to hear some really interesting arguments about immigration. You're going to hear some interesting arguments about abortion in such a setting because they're so used to supporting Democrats. I mean, and the same thing happens, like take gay rights and the Clinton campaign. Do you think she does her gay rights appeal really full bore when she's standing in front of an African-American megachurch in Atlanta?
No.
Okay, so there's another tension. But here comes the one that I think is fascinating, and you and I have discussed this before. Several years ago, the great pollster and social scientist John Green of Akron, who you've heard me quote forever, he drew this all up on a board for me like 3 years, 4 years before the term none, N-O-N-E-S, had ever really hit, you know, the vocabulary of the American journalist covering religion or politics. And he basically said, that in America, we have about 20% of the population. These figures will be familiar to you because we discussed them before. He said we've got about 20% of the American public that is actively living a set of religious doctrines of some kind. They're intensely affected by their religious beliefs. He said, now the action right now is on the other side. He said, for years, we've talked about there being just like 2% of atheists, 3% of atheists, but the atheist-agnostic percentage of the American population has begun to grow. Now, you attach that small section of the American public to the emerging religious unaffiliated numbers, which are, you know, that's been all the rage now for two years or so in terms of coverage. Then you attach those numbers to the religious liberals, the people like, say, in Reform Judaism or in mainstream establishment Episcopal churches, say, Northeast sectors of the United Methodist Church or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, truly doctrinal liberal expressions of religion. You put those three groups together, atheist agnostic meets the religious unaffiliated, meets the small declining but still there religious liberal coalition in American life. You put those three together, and he said, all of a sudden, you're now looking at about 20 to 25% of the American public. So it's like our world is now bracketed on, you have this strong religious traditional group or people who are living traditional forms of doctrine on one side of the American spectrum of religion, and then on the other you have this emerging kind of functional coalition of what could be called something like the religious left, or maybe the spiritual left, or the semi-spiritual left, or whatever. The main thing is that those liberal groups tend to agree with one another, especially on hot-button social issues like gay rights, abortion, etc. In fact, the surveys indicate that one of the things that make you a member of the religious unaffiliated is that you disagree with traditional teachings on sex. That's the theme that runs through the whole emerging world of the religious unaffiliated. So what does that have to do with politics? Well, if part of the Democratic coalition consisted of trying to keep people happy on some of these hot-button issues, now, according to several surveys, including the Pew, and people are beginning to talk about this, there was a story about it the other day in the Washington Post, the nuns, the religious unaffiliated, and the atheist agnostic crowd, that is now the largest united religious point of view in the current Democratic Party coalition. Now, have you heard that?
No.
Now, do you think that their interests on issues related to moral and cultural issues, but let's take another issue, like how about government aid or at least neutrality being expressed toward religious schools, maybe like tuition vouchers being paid to individual parents? Do you think that an African-American family in an urban situation in a horrible school might be more likely to support tuition vouchers than, say, an atheist living in Newark?
Very much more.
Okay. So what I'm saying is there are some tensions now inside the Democratic Party coalition that center on differences on religion. And I think those are fascinating. I think it's fascinating that the Republican Party hasn't been able to crack through reaching Latino or African American evangelicals and Pentecostals and others. But you have to at least admit in your mind that they exist, don't you, before you can cover them?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the media and mutual misconceptions of red and blue Americans. We'll get to some of those misconceptions. Some of them are pretty big right after this.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Wednesday, March the 2nd. Terry Mattingly is our guest of GetReligion.org. We're talking about the media and mutual misconceptions about red and blue Americans. So we've kind of talked about it a little bit here, but you've written more extensively about it recently, Terry, these mutual misconceptions of red and blue Americans. First of all, what are the misconceptions? How egregious are they?
Okay, yeah. I did a post recently that cited some that were in a fascinating article in the Washington Post. And in this, they said Americans basically don't even understand each other. In fact, in some cases, they don't even understand themselves. And it had this set of charts, which I had to just kind of approximate because they were copyrighted and I couldn't drag them over and stick them in Get Religion. So I summarized some of the facts. But let's just play a little game here for a second. It asked Republicans and they asked Democrats to name what percentage of the Democratic Party consists of atheists and agnostics. Now, I don't know if you memorized those numbers, but still, do you remember how high the Republican estimate was? What percentage of did Republicans think the Democratic Party was atheist or agnostic?
I think it was somewhere 30, 35, 36.
Yeah, you got it. It was 36. Now, what I thought was fascinating is that Democrats weren't that out of line on the estimate, but Democrats thought 25% of their party was atheist or agnostic, and the actual number is 9. Now, I thought it was interesting that when you did this with evangelicals, whatever that word means, people got a little bit closer. I would assume that's because there's just been so much coverage of evangelicals and not a whole lot of coverage of political atheists and agnostics. Democrats estimated that 44% of all Republicans are evangelicals. And Republicans, ironically, agreed. They thought 43%. and the real number was 34. I'm going to give two other now that have to do with kind of issues that are not directly religious but can get tied to religion or certainly to class in some ways. One of them was they asked Republicans what percentage of the Democratic Party is gay, lesbian, or bisexual. And Republicans thought 38% of the Democratic Party was gay. And Democrats almost went to the same number. They thought 29, when according to these polls, the actual number is 6. Now, what in the world would create such a radical misconception?
You have the answer, don't you?
sort of, but we'll go one more. They asked Democrats what percentage of Republicans in America make more than $250,000 a year. And Democrats estimated 44%. Ironically, once again, Republicans thought that 33% of their party made that much a year. The actual percentage is 2. And when you stop and think about this, where can information this flawed on cultural and religious issues come from? And there's really only essentially two answers, and two answers that then lead to a third kind of a fusion sort of thing. Basically, it's got to be news coverage, or some people forget how important the world of entertainment is. So if you look at mainstream news and then you look at the entertainment industry, that produces kind of a flawed set of what we assume about other people, especially people who are different than us. And then that can turn into paranoia. And so then you just get Americans just believing all kinds of things, like all evangelicals are going for Donald Trump. Doesn't that just fit what you think should be happening?
So it's one thing to say that the media has contributed or perhaps even created this complex of, it's hard to even call these misconceptions. These are so egregious.
Yeah, just inaccuracies.
Yeah, just complete inaccuracies, sometimes close to opposite of the truth kind of things. But how have they done it?
Well, part of it is just overwhelming coverage of certain issues that the public just assumes it must be that important. If listeners want to do something fun, open a browser, pop open Google, and type inside quotation marks, the phrase religious right, and then put that inside quotes and hit enter. And you will get a very high number of returns. If you even do that within Google News, you just limit yourself to current news product, you'll get an astonishing number. Now turn around and do the exact same thing with religious left, inside quotation marks. And then compare these two numbers. And what you come away with there is the fact that the press simply believes the religious right is one of the most important things on planet Earth. In part, maybe because it feels threatening. Meanwhile, the religious left hardly exists in our coverage. Now, would that influence how news consumers across the country view these two subjects? Of course it would. I mean, if you don't read coverage, I mean, how many times have you read news stories that go out of their way to talk about religious right leaders all getting together and planning this, that, or the other, you know, on issues, that, you know, the Supreme Court announcement or this, that? You see those stories all the time. How often do you read stories about atheists and agnostic leaders getting together in the Democratic Party to hold a meeting to see if they can influence the next nominee for the court?
Right. I would even doubt, based on the coverage, that such things occur. I mean, that would be my initial reaction.
Right. At which someone say, well, they don't think of themselves as atheists and agnostics. They just think of themselves as academic leaders. In other words, they're not organized by their lack of religion. Well, I'm not even sure we can assume that to be true anymore. I think that the kind of secular, unaffiliated, true doctrinal left coalition is getting so big in the Democratic Party that I wouldn't be surprised if the White House, the Obama White House, didn't have a set of advisors from that community. people that they take seriously and that they listen to on a regular basis, to see how certain policy initiatives might play with them. The way a Republican president would have a set of advisors for evangelicals, traditional Catholics, et cetera, and we're thinking about doing the following bill, you better call up the leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, the Mormons, the U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference, the Orthodox Jewish community of New York. You better run this past them just to see what they think. Well, everybody knows Republicans do that. But do you think Democrats do that with people on the religious or irreligious left? I would assume the answer to that's yes. But how would we know if it's never covered?
I started our conversation with just kind of a speculation about the face that pops into the average American's mind with the term religious right. If you Google religious right and you just click images, you get a couple, you know, Ronald Reagan's, a lot of Jerry Falwell's, a lot of the late Jerry Falwell's. You get nothing that seems coherent if you Google religious left. If you were to answer the question, what's the face? Who's the face of the religious left? If Jerry, let's just concede that Jerry Falwell might be the face of the religious right.
I think that's a great question. Who are the televangelists of the religious left or the irreligious left? Well, I think at that point you hit the world of entertainment, don't you? Don't you hit Bill Maher on HBO? Don't you hit Jon Stewart at Comedy Central? To some degree. And then you hit kind of the atheist evangelists, you know, who are often connected with science. But instead of thinking of them as scientists, perhaps think of them as educators. But then you get to, how about donors? We hear a lot about conservative donors. Who are the liberal donors who have a powerful religious or anti-religious worldview? At that point, you hit George Soros. And you try to imagine that if you had someone who had as much power as George Soros does among Democratic causes and liberal causes, can you imagine the amount of coverage he would get if he was a fundamentalist Christian and was doing the same amount of donating, working, and agitating from the right? Do you think more people would know his name and know his picture?
Absolutely. He would be a household name.
So, but I think that is interesting, and it says a lot about why Republicans and why cultural conservatives have so much trouble getting their message across, that when you think of their equivalents on the left, you get primarily people who are in mainstream media and communications. Whereas, who did Jerry Falwell talk to? Do you think Jerry Falwell had a chance to go on TV every night and talk to many people under the age of 30?
Not really.
No, but you think that Jon Stewart did?
His career has been built on it.
Yeah. How about Bill Maher? Well, Bill Maher takes you up more into the edgy, hip, baby boomer generation or whatever, but HBO is HBO. For a long time, the cultural right has been paying for its anathemas that it has delivered to the world of entertainment, storytelling, humor, et cetera. And they're kind of getting, in some sense, what they deserve. But the main thing, though, is if you're going to communicate information, accurate or inaccurate, to the American public, and then you see the results of that information in stereotypes and misconceptions in the public, basically you've got to start with the news media or the entertainment industry. What else is there?
Finally, what does it say about the media, just to focus on the news media, what does it say about the media that this kind of inaccuracy now exists in people's conceptions of the other side?
Well, I think first of all, it's not a conspiracy. But you don't need a conspiracy if everybody tends to see the world through the same, you know, worldview lens. I think to some degree, the press doesn't think a religious left exists because they think those people are moderates. They think they're normal. It's like, if you look for political views, there's all kinds of scary people on the right, but there's very few scary people on the left, because to the average people who work in elite newsrooms in particular, the people on the left aren't scary. They're moderates. So we live in a world where hardly anybody actually is a liberal. In fact, it's amazing now what can get you called a conservative. But that's a whole other topic that you and I have talked about before. Remember, Andrew Sullivan recently was screamed at on Twitter simply because he said, "What? We know we've won this huge victory for gay rights." And, of course, he's a gay male and very active on the cause of gay marriage. But he said, "You know, but I don't want to live in an America where we don't have religious liberty and we can force people to change their conscience on religious issues." At which point, Twitter just exploded. And all of a sudden, Andrew Sullivan was a conservative again. But this isn't a conspiracy. It's, to some degree, the just a result of the lack of diversity in the organizations that produce a lot of our news and entertainment. And who's to blame for that? I think I can put blame on both sides.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.